reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owner's management.
That was hijacked on the ocean by the little bitty powerboat, which a lot of people are asking the question, how in the world can this happen? And I don't understand, but we'll leave that as it is there, though, and say, okay, it did happen, and they did take this gentleman hostage, and whatever happened. But, you know, now they've called out, of course, the Navy. Now they're calling out NATO into this situation. And what I think a lot of people may not be aware of is that 3 months ago, there was a deal struck with Hollywood and the Navy SEALs to do a reality show about shipping in the high seas. Now, this comes at a time in which this little story of the hero and the miracle of Easter coming in very conveniently for the powers that be that want to promote either the Navy SEALs or the military's, the good guy attitude of the military. So we look at that situation, and we know that that is now tainted in my mind simply because that there's been a three-month deal to do this kind of thing, have a reality show on this subject. So this is all intertwined with what just happened, I think, on this incident. Then we look at the news of the day today being, of course, the interrogation and whether or not these enhanced interrogation techniques were legal or not. Well, we know torture is illegal, so we're trying to divide and conquer based on, well, that not is it legal or not. We know it's illegal. Did they do it or did they not do it? Or who did it, who didn't do it? Or who should we bring into trial for this? Or who should we look at? Or, I mean, it's just, it's an exercise in distraction. And I think people are sickened by watching this on television because after reading that American Red Cross document on the torture that has taken place in our own military, I mean, we are just absolutely astounded that this country does something called torture. The International Committee of the Red Cross's report that they just released, and when I got a copy of it and read about the CIA detention program, it just made me absolutely ill. I can't even imagine doing this to an enemy, let alone under the guise of something that this country could do and call it legal. So the interrogation situation has brought a lot of attention on the fact that I think that we are going, this Orwellian concept, let me put it that way, the Orwellian concept of the enhanced interrogation techniques, meaning torture. And I'm very concerned that our people, our military, are now going to be subjected to torture. Since it's okay with us to do it, then why are we not going to expect our enemies to do it? I mean, you know that McCain himself was supposed to be a victim of torture, yet he promoted the torture bill and promoted torture. And he said that he gave a false statement under torture. I mean, how can we possibly believe, Dr. Stan, that anybody thinks that torture is actually going to work? Now, and I would have to ask you, you know, why did we do torture in Iraq?
Hold that thought, Joyce.
We're making this such a big issue.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour. And Joyce is going to be hopefully our guest once a month here, and we can keep abreast of what they're doing. Now, Joyce opened really talking about what happened as far as the Somali pirates, and I really think what we really have to do is not look at the story we see of the courageous captain, you know, who's now been returned to his family here, but what's the background of what happened in Somalia, and what the background was that, of course, there was the Islamic government. Remember, the whole radical Islamic movement was created by the Central Intelligence Agency. There was no radical Islamic movement, really, other than with the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a small fringe group in Egypt, and, of course, the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia. There was no radical Islam until the CIA began to encourage this during the Afghan War, where we brought the Mujahideen, the Islamic warriors from all over the world, and indoctrinated them in this radical form of Islam. And then we introduced textbooks into the schools in Afghanistan and Pakistan, pushing this radical form of Islam. If you don't believe it, we'll be glad to send you an article out of the Washington Post on this, entitled The ABCs of Jihad. We put out $53 million for Arabic textbooks to push radical Islam. Why would rational people do that? Unless maybe they wanted the radical Islamic movement, a resurgence of it, so it would have an enemy. Well, of course, what happened was the radical Islamics had taken the southern part of Somalia, and they'd stopped all the piracy. They would not allow piracy because it was against the Quran. And, of course, the American CIA and intelligence agencies then funded the Ethiopians to attack Somalia and drive out the radical Islamists, who, of course, we'd created in the first place. And now, of course, with the Ethiopians in there, well, the Somali pirates could operate, but this would not be a problem if we allowed our ships, American and other ships, to be with the people to have weapons, but they're not allowed to have weapons. And you say, well, why wouldn't you allow them to have weapons, especially when we know there are pirates out there that want to take the ships? And there's all sorts of excuses. Oh, we couldn't do that. Guns kill people. They might go off accidentally. Why, we couldn't have guns on our ships. Ladies and gentlemen, we always had guns on our merchant ships. There was a gun locker on every ship until, of course, this pirate threat came along, and then we removed the guns. Does this make any sense? But ladies and gentlemen, there's so much of what's going on that doesn't make sense unless you understand that they intentionally create the problems. And what's the solution? Maybe we need a new United Nations law, the Law of the Sea Treaty. Wouldn't that be a lot better than having piracy and having our ships stopped and some of our people killed? Maybe we ought to start arming our crews. Wouldn't that be a logical solution? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Joyce Riley. And Joyce, you go right ahead.
Well, I just think that we have to look at why this is taking place. Now, the Somali story that's not been told, going back to the issue of the big boat, the big ship, little boat, and the Somalis, is that they're starving to death. These people have no government over there, have no food. You know, they don't have electricity, they don't have running water, they don't have anything. They are starving to death. And plus, they're upset at the fact that their fishing waters are being taken, that the nuclear waste is being dumped into their backyard, the ocean. And so they're responding, and they're considering that this is not piracy on the open seas, but what this is self-defense of their own land, their territory, and their fishing area. So I can understand why they are responding in the manner in which they are. Now, of course, you know, the young man that was brought to the United States, Harold, is the enemy kidnapper. He's 16 years old. He's probably starving himself, has no idea what he's doing here. You know, imagine this poor child who's never seen running water before, who wakes up in the middle of New York City facing charges, and he's going to be in a jail for the rest of his life. I mean, since when do we people bring people from half a world away to try them in the United States? If there wasn't a big public relations ploy to do this. At the same time, of course, now we've got the Navy SEALs reality show. Now, that has not been announced. It is known, and it can be found on the Internet. The contract was signed, as I understand it, just before this event took place, which makes it even more suspect. But then moving on to the subject of torture, because our military, and I think, is going to be found guilty of this. I think there's going to be some poor private somewhere who's going to probably spend 18 years in prison, just like the girl did at Abu Ghraib, for having been involved in this, when in reality there were CIA, ultimately numbers of people that were involved in this, had much more knowledge of it, and simply directed these poor enlisted people to carry it out. Now we have to look at this Pakistani girl that was just kidnapped in light of the torture issue. Because, as I was saying earlier, I'm afraid our military are going to now be tortured by the quote-unquote bad guys, all of them, of course, Muslim bad guys, because pretty much the Muslims are the bad guys. Well, except for the extremists, and we can get into that in just a little bit, the domestic extremists here in the United States. But this young girl, Roxana Saberi, who was 31 years old, she holds a joint American-Iranian citizenship. She was a freelance writer who worked for BBC, National Public Radio, and Fox. She was in Iran to finish her graduate studies. She graduated with all kinds of honors. She had been a runner-up for Miss USA. She was a beauty queen. She was from Fargo, North Dakota, and they said she was guilty of espionage, gave her 8 years in prison. Now, why I would have to ask the listeners, do they not have the right in Iran to take this espionage girl, make her stand naked for 8 days, put her in a cold room, make her freeze, make her have to get into a box, lay there, waterboard her? I mean, why is it that the United States is the only one that can do that and call us morally fit? I think that we're going to start finding that our people are going to be tortured overseas. Think of all the kids that are picked up on drug charges overseas. I mean, what you do goes around, and it's going to come around. So I'm really quite concerned about setting the precedent that torture is okay. Well, excuse me, torture is okay as long as the United States does it, but not okay for other countries.
Yeah, I think that's so true. There was a program about 2 weeks ago on 60 Minutes, and it was one segment was about this fellow, an Iranian fellow, who got picked up by the government. He had made some out-of-government remarks, and, of course, he was thrown into prison, and he was tortured. But, of course, what really didn't quite make sense was that this guy who had been convicted of treason against Iran was suddenly released for medical care, and he's allowed to escape and come to America to tell this story. And we see him on 60 Minutes telling us how terrible Iran is and how they cut off people's hands and feet and how inhumane they are as far as beating their prisoners. But they do this in Saudi Arabia. They cut off hands and feet there and heads on a routine basis. Every Saturday you can go out and see the fun. Why do we ever talk about how terrible Saudi Arabia is? Because we're funding Saudi Arabia, and we've been funding him for a long period of time and keeping the ruthless government in power. Why are they focusing it on Iran? And ladies and gentlemen, I feel that this is exactly what we did with the Japanese before the Second World War, with the Germans before the Second World War, with the Germans before the First World War, with the people of Kuwait, the Iraqis, at the time of the Kuwait War, when they told us the phony story about the wicked Iraqi soldiers who went into the nurseries in Kuwait and took the children out of their bassinets and threw them on the ground and bayoneted them. Propaganda in preparation for war. And I fear that we're going to war with Iran. We're being conditioned to go to war with Iran. I think that this is what this story about the girl is all about. But go right ahead.
And I talk about PACs over and over again all day long. Well, lo and behold, there was a Pakistan Today, I subscribe to Pakistan Today, sent out a news release saying there was a concocted false flag plan of attack by the White House that has been finalized. Pakistan's enemies are preparing to deliver a decisive blow. It says that the author of this article says, I've been forewarning about the sinister designs of the adversaries of Pakistan wanting to harm Pakistan for the last 3 years. Under the garb of friendship, Pakistan, this is coming from the inside of Pakistan. Under the garb of friendship, Pakistan has been gradually and systematically weakened from within and destabilized through covert means employed by the Karzai puppet intelligence, CIA, duly complemented by the Mossad and the MI6. Now, this is their newsletter coming from Pakistan Today or Daily PK.
And, of course, I really think that, of course, everything we're doing over there is to destabilize the country. We send our drones in there, and they bomb cities, and maybe they get some Taliban or Al-Qaeda leaders, but they're going to kill a lot of civilians, and as a result, of course, the people are turning against the government because they think that their government has betrayed them and is working with the Americans. And I think this is all a prelude probably to a war with Pakistan, but people have forgotten. Pakistan
exactly.
Has
and that's
nuclear
what the
weapons.
PK says is we're getting ready to have a war started with us.
Absolutely.
Because under the guise of these CIA, and they talk in terms of, and I quote them, the sudden flurry of CIA-controlled drone attacks and terrorist attacks in various parts of Pakistan are clear indications that our adversaries are now all set to deliver the decisive hammer.
But yet, people don't understand that when you get into a terrible economic situation as the United States is today, what's the solution? Why you go to war? That's what the only way we got out of the Great Depression was the Second World War, and that was so engineered. In fact, anybody who's ever listened to our program regularly knows it was American corporations that were building up Adolf Hitler. It was American banks providing the money. It was American oil companies who were providing the oil. It was American chemical companies that were actually providing the chemicals. And any of you would like the copy of the letter that I found when I went to Colonel House's papers, you know, back in 1980, where the American ambassador to Germany at that time, William Dobb, is writing to Colonel House and saying, why are American corporations building the weapons for the German military? Nobody here wants another war. We just had a terrible war. Nobody wants another war. Why are the American corporations building the weapons of war for Germany? If you'd like to see the letter, we'd be glad to send it to anybody. Just give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. We've got the letter. I copied it out of Colonel House's papers, but you're not going to hear about this. Or, of course, Professor Sutton's book, where he talks about how the American corporations were building the weapons for Adolf Hitler, not only before the war, but during the war. And I'm talking about General Motors, I'm talking about Ford, I'm talking about AT&T, I'm talking about IBM, I'm talking about DuPont and so many of the other major corporations, the major banks, Exxon. They were all in on it. But, of course, we couldn't let the American people know we were building up Germany and Japan preparatory to the Second World War. Just as I fear we're building up China and Pakistan and Iran in preparation for the coming war with the rest of the world. Go ahead, Joyce.
Well, I think that when the Daily Pakistan starts addressing the fact that there's going to be a concocted false flag plan of attack on their country and starts naming MI6, Mossad, the United States CIA, I mean, they know what's going on. I think, Dr. Stan, they are about as unable to get the truth out as we are about, let's say, Obama's naturalization or whether or not he really has a right to be president. It's hard to get the word to people. It's hard to get the word about what really happened on 9/11. But I think the people in Pakistan are the very same. Now, they say that the U.S. and Western media, as well as the U.S. think tanks, have been playing upon the theme of the threat of al-Qaeda, or al-Qaeda, and its affiliates to security of Pakistan as well as the USA. Now, George Bush, they said, declared last July in 2008 that any future attack on the U.S. homeland would come from Fatah. Now, this is pretty bizarre stuff. Fatah, by the way, means federally administered tribal areas in Pakistan. It's an area of about, I think, about 10,000 acres where they say that all the terrorists are born in this area. And they're born and raised in this area.
Hold that thought, Joyce. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Joyce, go right ahead.
Well, also, along the same line, though, you recall when Karzai made that allegation of cross-border terrorism, saying that the bad guys were coming into Pakistan, also saying that they were shutting down the ability for us to be able to take in our weapons and men into Afghanistan. Now, that, I thought, was a story that just reeked with, disinformation, saying that the U.S. sprinkled all this sizzling theme by adding that certain elements within the Army and the ISI were linked with the Taliban, assisting them in the movement across the border, and that we were not being allowed to take our men and arms across the border. Well, all of this stuff now comes down to you don't even know what to believe. You have no idea what to believe. I mean, we heard a very serious story about the polo ponies dying yesterday. And then you start wondering, wait a minute, what really happened? What's behind this? Why are we hearing the story? Because we're so used to have to look beneath the surface of it to find out what really has happened, that I don't think people are trusting of any of the news that we hear. And it is literally Wag the Dog. And that movie, I don't know, I want to see it so badly again, but yet I'm afraid to. I know I'm going to be so angry and frustrated over the fact that that's what we're being fed every day, is the Wag the Dog theory.
You're talking about Dustin Hoffman. Yes, it was a wonderful story about how they created an imaginary war, and they convinced all the American people we were at war. And, of course, when Dustin Hoffman wanted to tell the American people what really happened, why, of course, the fellow said, you can't do that. Dustin Hoffman says, I can, of course I can. And he's walking out to his car, and suddenly you hear the shots, and that's the end. They can't let the American people know the truth any more than they can let them know that we've been transferring nuclear technology to Pakistan in preparation for this war. And if you have any question, go to my website at radioliberty.com. Read the January 2008 newsletter there, January 2008, called State Secrets. It's a story that's known all throughout the entire world about how America's been transferring nuclear technology to Pakistan so they could have nuclear weapons in what I fear is a preparation for an international nuclear war. But, of course, the story has not been allowed in the United States. What do you mean it hasn't been allowed in the United States? Well, you can get the article out of the London Times, but not out of the New York Times or any place here. The last thing they want is for the American people to know that our leaders are preparing for a nuclear war. And this is my fear, Joyce. I think that what you're saying is exactly right. Why would we want to go to war with Pakistan when they've got nuclear weapons? And do we really think that we're going to be able to keep the Taliban from getting them when we're doing everything we can to antagonize the people of Pakistan and the people of Afghanistan? Go right ahead.
Well, I just think that we have to continually ask ourselves, why are we hearing this story? Why are they making an issue of it? Just like going back to the Somali pirate story with the hero who was the miracle of Easter. He's not the miracle of Easter, but they made him out to be the miracle of Easter. And saying, I mean, one man. Now, remember the lieutenant who is now captain, who was a victim of the first Gulf War. He was a pilot, POW. They left him behind. They forgot all about him. Nobody was really concerned about him, but with this guy. And by the way, the Maersk, Alabama, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the Maersk, Alabama, the owner of that ship, has a high-level clearance from the Pentagon. He has a top-secret clearance.
Maybe just hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Joyce was just talking about the man who owned the Alabama. That was the ship that was captured by the pirates, and the captain was freed by the heroic sails. But basically, Joyce is just saying that the man who owns that ship has a top-secret clearance from the Pentagon. Why would he have a top-secret clearance? He's running shipping boats, or freight boats throughout the world. Well, let me tell you that the CIA and, of course, the secret intelligence agencies have lots of operations in every aspect of the world, and the way they get the money to buy the ships is American tax dollars at work. But we don't know that's the case here. All we do know is that they conceal constantly from the common people the machinations that are going on by the elite who are preparing, I fear, for World War III, which will be a nuclear war. But don't you fear, Henry Kissinger has already told us that the world faces chaos, and I believe it does. Go right ahead.
Well, the very fact that they keep talking about the Maersk, Alabama, you know, they keep dropping the name of the ownership, of the owner of the line. I mean, that's a little bit like too much advertising, if you ask me. And I call that story, me think they doth report too much, because they report on the story 5 days in a row. It was like nothing else was on the news during that time except for, is he coming home? Is he going to be all right? Well, of course, they knew he was going to be all right from the very beginning. And it sounded so created and so agendized. But the very fact that this man who owned the shipping line has a top-secret clearance, is a defense contractor to carry corn oil to Kenya, I mean, that's supposedly what they were doing. So the whole thing now comes down to where we don't know who to trust. We don't know which news to listen to. We don't know if Glenn Beck's the real deal. We don't know if Judge Napolitano's really the real deal on Fox, which I tend to think that he is, having met him a couple of weeks ago, along with Ron Paul, in St. Louis. I really believe that he is the real deal. But it's hard right now because we're fed so much junk. Now, let me move to the subject of the veterans right now, because they are in the news as being alleged extremists. Nearly what they want you to believe, or what they are wanting the public to believe, is that these guys coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan are disgruntled and looking to become white supremacist members. It's like they're going to the phone book the minute they get home to find out, how can I be a member of a white supremacist group? Of course that's not true. And of course the military are absolutely astounded that they would have been brought into this extremist role this early after coming home. I mean, when the war hasn't even been fought yet. It's not even won. I mean, we've only taken 60% of Iraq, or Baghdad. We've only taken 60% of Baghdad. And it seems like the Somali pirates are having better luck than we are in our own military. But here we have these guys that are being designated as possible extremists. Well, the group Oath Keepers is very upset about it. And if you haven't been to their website, oath-keepers.org, this organization says, as a group of military people, that has signed up and said, we will not take arms from the American public if ordered to do so. And I think that's pretty impressive. They have a whole list of things that they will not do if called upon to do so. They have said they will stand down. And I'm very impressed because it's very similar. And, of course, they are resounding the actions of Michael New and talk in terms of him as being the one person who stood up for the United States.
Hold that thought. Oh, no, go right ahead. We're all right. Go ahead.
Oh, stood up for the United States and stood down to the United Nations. And if you don't know about Michael New, it's N-E-W. Go to michaelnew.com. So many people weren't even alive when Michael New took this stand that it's a shame they don't know who he is. But now the Oath Keepers group is getting in there, and they are making a difference. Well, I'm going to tell you what I had a lengthy interview with a recent return from Iraq and Afghanistan who is a law enforcement officer inside the government. That's all I'm going to say. And he sent me some documentation which from the inside that showed that there is no question that they are wanting to make the U.S. military returning from Iraq and Afghanistan appear to be extremist. In fact, this didn't just start now. It started during the Olympics. That was the first documentation that I got. It was in 2004. That they are going to be removing most of the military police officers that are in any kind of active duty position, and I'm talking outside of military bases. So if it's some type of military facility, VA facility, they do not want any military law enforcement people there.
Well, I think that certainly these men, most of them young and idealists, went off to fight for America. They didn't realize that the leaders of our country hate the military. And I think that Henry Kissinger expressed it best in the book The Last Days when he said, you know, they're simply stupid animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. That's the quotation from Bob Woodward. Fascinating to understand how the elite really feel about the men who are willing to die for our country. But of course, Henry Kissinger, the others, hate America. This is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon is Joyce Riley. I guess it's evening back where you are, Joyce. You go right ahead.
Let me just give you a little bit more information that came from this law enforcement gentleman inside the military. He told me that there is not just a casual desire to want to make these troops look like they are crazy or extremist. There is literally almost an operation underway to do so. In fact, there have been people ordered to create and become a witness to a statement that the individual didn't even make. In other words, there have been people that have been told to go into a room, sit down, and sit here and write out statements to incriminate a certain individual. In other words, I heard him say he hated black people and wanted to kill them all. That might be an example of a statement. I heard him say that he was jealous of so-and-so and would like to wipe them out. These kinds of statements were being used against these individuals, and how do you have any kind of defense against the fact that I didn't say that? I mean, any individual can come up and say, I heard Joyce Riley say she wants to ABCD. And for me to say, what is your proof? Well, you can't do that in the military. There's no room for that. If someone comes and makes a statement against you, I don't care if you take it to the IG and go up the whole chain of command, you really don't have any kind of defense, and it's really scary. So he said that they are being ordered to create witnesses and create comments to try and get rid of military law enforcement. They literally want to make these people look as though they are crazy or extremist. Now, I remember when the Second Gulf War started back in 2003, And at Norfolk, Virginia, Naval Air Station, or Naval Station there, Rumsfeld had a meeting with all of the troops that were departing, of course, for the media and for the people of America to be gung-ho on the war. And he said, I need to tell you something. Your men will not return to you the same as they left. Now, I'll tell you what, I saw red flags everywhere when I heard that, because that was like, I'm telling you what's going to happen, and then later on I'll tell you that it happened. Well, what happens? They go off to the war and they come back with neurological problems. They come back with PTSD. And these people are now, yes, they're telling me, I am absolutely sick about what I did. I mean, I was a Christian. I went to Iraq. I fought this war.
Hold that thought, Joyce. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce is simply pointing out the attitude of the elite towards our servicemen. Those of you who have not yet read the report that came out, it was released basically from the Office of Homeland Security, that talked about the threat, your domestic threat of terrorism, of people who believe in abortion, people, of course, who oppose homosexual marriage, people, you know, who are veterans, or any one of them could become a terrorist, a lone terrorist. We've got to let law enforcement know who the potential enemy is. And, of course, it's people who believe in the Constitution, who oppose the federal control, who want state and local control. Can you imagine that? If you're out there in the listening audience and you have not yet got this report, it is up on the internet. If you can't get it, we'll be glad to send you a free copy of it. If you get something else from us, we'll make it available to you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. But the thing that's so infuriating is the emphasis on how terrible our veterans are, how dangerous they are, that they could become lone assassins and murderers like Timothy McVeigh. They never mentioned the fact that Timothy McVeigh wrote to his sister Jennifer and said that he was actually, in truth, working for a special forces, a secret special forces, a unit that covered in a book called OK Bomb by Jim Keith, who died shortly after he wrote the book under mysterious circumstances. Well, it could have been an accident. He was a young man and healthy and had a minor surgery. But then his publisher died a few weeks later, and then his wife died a few weeks after that. All coincidences, just because. And then, because, what about the other people? Timothy McVeigh told Terry Nichols that he was working for a special forces unit, but nobody can get in to talk to Terry Nichols. Orders come down from the Attorney General. Nobody can talk to Terry Nichols. Why not? And then, of course, the cellmate with Timothy McVeigh wrote a book called A Secret Worth Dying For. And what did Timothy McVeigh tell him? Why, I was working as a special unit of the special forces involved in illegal activity. I wonder why that book has never been reviewed. All of these things, we can document everything I've told you, but you're never going to hear that. All you're going to read is this report that's come out of the Office of Homeland Security. Timothy McVeigh was a veteran. That means that all veterans are potential enemies of the state and might want to, of course, bring about acts of terrorism. Before we go on, Joyce, I want you to get your website out and tell people how they can listen to your programs.
I'd like for you to go to GulfWarVets.com, which is all about what's happened to the military, and ThePowerHour.com, and listen on the Internet, GCNLive.com or ThePowerHour.com, or on shortwave, and I think from 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time. And I think that we are gaining, Dr. Stan, in a lot of areas that people didn't think that we were going to get listeners. I get military people writing to me all the time that are listening in the military, that are active duty. And they have nothing but kudos for us. Nothing but kudos. They agree with nearly every single thing that I say. In fact, what's been really, really encouraging is they've been asking to get copies of Beyond Treason. And so I will send them 10 or 20 copies of Beyond Treason to distribute to their units. I just got a American Legion commander who wrote to me and said, this is so good, I want to play it, and I want to give a copy to all of my people that are affected in the American Legion here. And they want to get multiple copies, which we give them.
For our listeners out there, that's the story of the Gulf War illness and the fact that they knew that they were destroying the lives of hundreds of thousands of our men. But it's really one of the most powerful DVDs we carry, and of course you can get it from Joyce, you can get it from us, but everybody who loves America should see the DVD, Beyond Treason. Go right ahead.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, along with that, consider the fact that the American Legion, the VFW, nowhere are they making a stand on this issue of extremists and military. You would think they would have been on the front door of Obama's White House saying, what do you think you are doing? But it's not happening. And that's of concern to a lot of veterans that are now starting to see who's really behind them and who's not. But I just think, though, that what we're looking at now is the further exploitation of our military. If we didn't exploit them over there by filling them full of depleted uranium or, you know, blowing off a leg or an eye, we're going to bring them home and do that very thing here by exploiting them and tracking them down here. And, of course, now with the addition of the drugs that have been given to them, and I'm talking about, you know, Prozac, Zoloft, Effexor, whatever, all of these SSRI antidepressant drugs, these poor troops get on these drugs, and then they may go to the VA, or the VA may say, oh, we've decided you don't have PTSD, or we don't think it's compensable, or we're not going to give you compensation, whatever it is, and they pull them off the drugs, or they take away their supply. And what happens? Guess what? They go ballistic. In fact, I am looking at the Army Times. Now, this happens to be the 2 February edition of Army Times, but there's a huge article in here, and I don't think people are aware of this, but there was a stand-down ordered of all the recruiters in Houston because of the massive amounts of suicide among the Houston recruiters. I mean, that's unheard of before, that you have people that have been that long in the military and that high up the enlisted rank that are now committing suicides. Huge numbers of them. Then you look at the news. They're just the news. You open the front page, and there it is. Soldier found dead in barracks. Ex-soldier guilty in hunting death. Soldier shoots wife. Soldier kills 2 children. I mean, it's all over the place. And that, it goes on. Soldier charged in shooting death. Man kills soldier, wife, and himself. And just story after story of soldiers killing each other. Now, you know, when you and I were in the military, I can't speak for you. When I was in the military, you didn't ever see a story about a soldier killing another soldier. It just didn't happen. And if it did happen, the last thing you did was put it out there in big black letters on the front of the Army Times magazine. So, but now there is a different motivation, if you will, which is to make them look bad. So you've got all these guys who, and by the way, according to what I've been hearing, between 20% and 30% of our military active duty in Iraq have been placed on antidepressant drugs to keep them from going crazy or going home or going AWOL or going whatever. They're giving them these SSRI drugs. Boy, what we need to do is put together SSRI drugs and a rifle. Now, that's a good thing. Now, think about how dangerous that is. And you wonder why these guys are killing each other over in Iraq, and I'm talking about the soldiers themselves, or why they come home and kill their spouses. I mean, story after story, too many to even follow now.
And I think it's important that people understand the SSRI drugs can make you homicidal or suicidal. Now, certainly it only happens at maybe 2 or 3%. But when you've got millions of people who are taking these drugs, which you really want to be giving them a drug, is it going to make them homicidal or suicidal?
It's incredible that people would do this. It's incredible they would place them on these drugs with all the potential problems that they have. Now, pilots are not allowed to take them. Think about that. If you're an Air Force pilot or a rated personnel in the military, rated meaning flying personnel, you're not allowed to take them. And if you have taken Prozac within a year of joining the military, well, you can't join. Or else you have to go through a huge procedure to get a waiver. And the waiver most likely is going to keep you from joining the military anyway, and it's a useless process. So why is it that you cannot have taken them before you join the military? You can't take them if you're flying, but you can take them if you're on the front lines or after you come home. And then they put them on, and we're now investigating the combination of the statin drugs and the SSRI drugs. as being potential problems, because it seems like every vet that I've talked to is on both of those. A statin drug for cholesterol lowering, allegedly, and a SSRI drug, antidepressant. So what is the nexus between these two drugs? Is there some kind of synergistic effect? And Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, who wrote the book Prozac, Panacea, or Pandora, has been following a lot of these military people that are on these drugs and that are just killing at will, killing the people that they love. And we've talked about that before on this program. So they get on these drugs. They have neurological problems as a result of the depleted uranium, without a doubt. They come home, and it's any wonder that any of them, Dr. Stan, are normal. It's a wonder. After breathing in that much depleted uranium, eating it in their food, and drinking it in their water, it's a wonder that any of them are even able to walk around and be normal. The problem is they have started self-medicating because they're in so much pain as a result of whatever they've experienced, and they're not given adequate treatment for their illnesses. And then they're placed on drugs like, begins with an E, but it's a drug to make them lose their memories. Now, that's a one way to forget about the bad times, just lose your memory entirely.
Are you talking about Delaville?
No, it's an illegal drug. It wasn't an illegal drug. Ecstasy. They're using that in VA hospitals now because it eliminates the memory. Now, I learned about it experimentally in Washington State. It was being used at the VA hospital about 6 years ago. And since that time, they've continued to use it and show how it's effective in taking away their memories. Well, that's just great. But you'd sure like to remember that you had a child born at one point in time in your life, I think, also. So that coupled with the fact that they're putting patients on methadone, I cannot tell you how many people I've talked to, but the people are just simply placed on methadone for pain control. Well, now that's an addicting drug for sure, and you're not going to most likely get off of that period ever. So why would they do that? I mean, I've heard of people that, not horrendous amounts of pain, I mean, not like a cancer patient, but they're placed on methadone. I don't understand that. Because I used to give out methadone at one point in prison, and that's something you need all the time, and you cannot go without it. So why start people on methadone in the first place? I mean, we're not trying to get them off of heroin. These are military people coming out of the military, either retiring or going through the VA process. And then you look at the percentage of people that have been going through the VA process. Let's say we had, I'm going to just use a figure, of 1 million people have been to Iraq and back. And then we say that, well, 50% of those people have already been to the VA. Now, to me, 50% of young guys that are allegedly well coming out of the military, and I'm not talking about war injuries, shouldn't be visiting a VA. Because you don't really go to a VA for a cold. You go to a VA when you really need something that's going to require some insurance. But yet I have seen article after article. It's amazing the people that are trying to get into VA hospitals right now. And it's almost impossible because there's so many people that have war injuries needing to be taken care of by the VA hospital. So they've designed these things called the Warrior Transition Units. Now, the WTUs, Warrior Transition Units, were developed because of so many problems at the Washington Hospital for the military there that they got in trouble with having, the hospitals were not up to speed, so they started these WTUs. Well, you've got the WTU, for instance, that is at Fort Carson, Colorado, and they have had more than 70 soldiers who have died while assigned to that unit. Now, that's not a unit for people that were hurt in battle. That's for people just coming out of the military or coming out of Iraq called the WTUs. So they're putting them in these transition units, and they're committing suicide. They're dying in bed. I mean, 70 soldiers died at this one WTU. Now, they have one at Fort Carson. They have another one at Fort Stewart. They have them, well, I have them all over the country. But huge numbers of them, Well, for, as an example, in one group of WTU...
Four was less than 20 years ago.
...or VA program, which very few people could. I couldn't even get into the VA when I came back, and I had, you know, a neuromuscular neurological disease. I couldn't get into the VA, so I wasn't considered one of those people that was ill, so they wouldn't have even known what happened to me. They were not followed. How many... See, it's like the... You know, statistics can be manipulated tremendously, and that's what they did. Because what they did was say, out of the 680,000 people that we followed, 80,000 died. Now, if you were out of the military, not in the reserves, didn't go to the VA hospital, they don't have any idea what happened to you because they didn't track them. But see, it's that number...
Joyce is on the satellite with us. We have a 24-hour satellite feed. She's on now, 9 hours a day, and I think I'm on 9 hours a day.
I love the satellite.
I do. I think it's great. If you, of course, you would like to, you get an inexpensive satellite, wonderful way to hear us, and so many other good Christian programs. And then, of course, the Gulf War Veterans Association, what do you call it?
GulfWarVets.com website.
GulfWarWebs.com website. Go there. Get the information. Help us to get the truth out. Well, Joyce, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program before we let you go.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Stan. And I do want to say thank you for continuing to tell the story. So many people have forgotten it. And having Doug Rocky on is really just incredible. Dr. or Major Doug Rocky, former military, former, well, now retired, military retired, has done a tremendous job in advocating for the veterans. You know, I called the Department of Defense. I had their public relations phone number, contacted them, and talked to the PR people for the Department of their Secretary of Defense. And I told them we were going to be having Doug on and the statements he was making, and I asked the Department of Defense if they would come on and refute them and discuss these issues. If it's, you know, if these people aren't dying with DU, then tell us. And do you know, I went around and around with the DOD. I cannot tell you how frustrating it was. No one will come on and address Dr. Doug Rocky. No one that I can find anywhere in the government will address that man, because he's right. He is right on. And I do encourage people to get Beyond Treason. If you were in the military, I'll give you a copy of it at no charge, because we want people to get this and to know about it, especially those people that are going into the military and being recruited. See it first, and if you still want to join the military, that is your decision. But I do thank you for mentioning Beyond Treason and Doug Rocky. He is a real hero, sir.
He really is. Well, we're very, very fortunate to have access to so many wonderful people out there, people who are patriots, who love America, and have dedicated themselves, even at great personal danger and personal expense, that try to get the story out. So Doug's story of the depleted uranium and the devastating effects it had, his personal experience with it, the fact that most of the men in his unit, he commanded a unit, their job was to decontaminate the tanks and armored personnel carrier that had been hit by friendly fire during the first Gulf War. And apparently a significant part of his unit is dead. I mean, that's a frightening thing, but we never hear about that, isn't it? Isn't it strange?
That's right. And by the way, Fort Detrick has now announced that they have some disease samples that are missing, so we can get ready to look for more problems coming because of a result of, oh, we are so stupid. So just more and more, you know, disinformation, misinformation, and agenda news. Thank goodness we have people like you that are willing to help us see through that, sir.
And you too. Unfortunately, there are more and more of them out there getting the information, getting it out across America, and I believe that people are beginning to wake up. They know something's wrong. They're looking for answers. And, well, you can get them on the Power Hour. You can get them here at Radio Liberty. Joyce Riley, thanks very much for being with us. And we look forward to having you with us again next month.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye, and God bless.
Bless.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Joyce Riley. Always a pleasure to have Joyce with us. I hope you'll enjoy our program, as we have a certain number of regulars on. Once the Internet, it's hard to find. In fact, they've done everything to conceal it, but the Veterans Administration admission that almost 80,000 of the original 695,000 would tell the truth about what happened in 1967. And for 20 to 30 years, these servicemen, American servicemen, lived in constant fear, destroyed their lives. They wanted to tell the truth, but they were afraid. They had been threatened. If you want to get the truth about the murder of Martin Luther King, it's the execution of Martin Luther King, a four CD set on that. Bobby Kennedy, the 4-CD set. And then, of course, we carry the book going into Bobby Kennedy Must Die. And then, of course, the DVD, Who Killed Bobby Kennedy. And then, of course, we have the book, Target Patton, the story of the plan to kill General Patton. They couldn't have him coming back home and telling the American people that General Eisenhower and General Marshall had cut off his gasoline so he couldn't get his armored division through and end the war 4 to 6 months early. You see, they wanted to prolong the war as long as they could and kill as many American servicemen as they could. If you'd like that clipping from the Chicago Tribune, it tells about how the Japanese kept trying to surrender, and we wouldn't let them, and the invasion of Iwo Jima and Okinawa, and dropping the two bombs, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, were unnecessary. Just ask for that, if you want to get, of course, the article from Ambassador Dodd about the fact that American corporations were building off Hitler's military. They're available. We'll send those for nothing. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927.